accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
They taught you good. Made you believe their world.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there. And no one, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Paradigm. I'm your host, Paul Breckell. Well, last week's episode, unbeknownst to me at the time, I don't know why I hadn't realised it, but it was a milestone episode and it was episode 50, and obviously this week's episode is 51. But I came across a statistic the other day that stated that the average podcast only lasts 8 episodes, which was quite a statement, really, when you consider that there's so many podcasts out there and that the average one, they're saying, only lasts 8 episodes, which obviously isn't long at all. Well, I've reached, obviously, this one's going to be number 51. And I can sort of understand why that possibly, you know, a lot of podcasts only reach that 8th episode, because I've been thinking just over the last few weeks how difficult it is actually doing a podcast. When I first started this podcast, for all those who have only just started listening, I used to do monologues. I think I've done about 15 monologues in total. And you're researching every single week a new topic. And like I've stated before, I'm a working man, so I'm doing this podcast. It's totally independent around my work. So you're researching new topics every single week. Then you're having to record them, edit them, and publish them. So it's very time consuming. And even with regards to interviews, which is in a way slightly easier, but it's also very time consuming because you're having to find guests, you're having to email guests, and sometimes before you've even got something sorted out, you could have been waiting up to like 2 to 3 weeks before it's all finalized, because sometimes you send an email, you might be waiting a week for a response, you then respond to that email, you're then trying to sort out things regarding time zones, because I'm in the UK, a lot of my speakers that I've had on here who I've interviewed are not in the UK, so you're having to sort out regarding the time zone, and it can become very time consuming, and it is very time consuming. And then you get people that let you down. I've had someone let me down literally less than an hour before an interview. An interview was booked for a number of weeks, 6-7 weeks, it was already booked. Then all of a sudden, oh, something's popped up. This is a major podcaster. I'm not going to make any comments regarding names or disclose any more information regarding that. But I was let down, and this person, supposedly a Christian, and they let me down saying that something had popped up and they couldn't do the interview anymore. And that was less than 1 hour before the interview. And they said to me, oh, I can understand if you don't want to rearrange. So I called the bluff and said, no, I'll rearrange. And I sent them some further dates. Anyway, they completely ghosted me. And sometimes that's what happens in this game. You just get ghosted. And I have asked for people in the past to suggest guests for this show. And I've had a few suggestions, which I'm going to look into. And if anyone else has any suggestions, it would be extremely helpful. I've got a number of emails that I've sent out. Some have been, I've waited for one guy, he's been on here before. I'm assuming that now he's probably extremely busy, because from when I first interviewed this gentleman, I would imagine he's a lot more busy now. And this is what happens, unfortunately. Sometimes you get these guests on who become extremely popular, and then they're difficult to get back on because they're going on to bigger things. And the time's being used up, and that's understandable. But these are sort of the problems that you face doing a podcast. So, you know, the monologues, it's the research and everything like that, time-consuming. But it's also time-consuming. You're having to research who your guest is, because not every topic, I'm not an expert by any means on these topics that I speak to people about. Some I have prior knowledge, which it makes it easier. And then some things it's completely new to me. But I'm hoping that people are enjoying the podcast. I mean, the numbers are growing, so thanks for everyone who is tuning in week after week. And just for anybody who's not listened to this podcast before, you can become a member of the podcast. There's two membership levels, but the one where you'll get extra episodes is the premium membership. You can go to my Patreon, Beyond the Paradigm, and you can sign up there and you get access to the Discord server. You get to vote on what topics you want on the show. You get early access. So each episode is published on a Friday, but you get early access, so you get it on a Thursday. And there's a monthly episode going to be published every month, which is for members only. But you can look on there. Some people have signed up and you get a shout out on here, and I've given those people a shout out. There's also a basic membership where you get the Discord server, you get a shout out, you get to vote, you help the show stay on air, but you don't get access to the early episodes or the member only episodes, which is for premium members only. But thank you for everyone who's done that. Thank you for anyone who's gone on Buy Me a Coffee and made a one off donation. You can do that on there. It's very helpful because there are a lot of costs incurred. One of the things regarding interviewing people is that I always have people who have wrote books and they've done documentaries. And what I was finding is I was buying these people's books and reading them, and it was costing a lot of money, and I had to stop doing that. So what I do now, I download samples on Kindle, and it gives me enough information regarding this person's book to be able to formulate an interview, because it's just not even workable to be buying everyone's books. And some of them have 8 and 9 books, and you just can't do it. There's just not enough time in a day to read the books in a week to get the interview formulated. Well, that's enough of that. I've got a new guest this week who's not been on the show, Pastor Jeff Rhodes, who is the administrative pastor at Topeka Baptist Church, which I believe is in Kansas. And Jeff has graduated from Calvary Bible College and Louisiana Theological Seminary, and he's received a PhD in Biblical Studies from Louisiana Baptist University. And he's wrote a fascinating book entitled The Bible, Dimensions and the Spiritual Realm. Are Heaven, Angels and God Closer Than We Think? And it's a mind-blowing book, to be honest with you, the topics that are covered in here. Like I said, I've read some of it. I'll just give you an example of some of the chapters, like the paranormal and the supernatural and the Bible, step into the next dimension, time machines and twilight zones, blown minds and string theory, living in a designer world. Well, we know we live in a designer world because God created the world. The digital 3D program called life. So this is a fascinating episode. It's quite mind-blowing, some of the concepts that we'll consider in this episode. And as people, we need to be humble and realize we actually know next to nothing. And I'm quite happy to admit I know next to nothing. And I think it's actually pride when we seek to try and answer questions that we clearly don't know the answers to. And it's okay to say that we don't know. So without further ado, I'm going to go and bring Jeff onto the show. Jeff Rhodes, thank you for joining me and welcome to Beyond the Paradigm for the first time.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, definitely excited to talk to you. Like I said to you, I'd seen your book on Amazon, The Bible Dimensions and the Spiritual Realm Are Heaven, Angels and God Closer Than We Think. But before we get into the book, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and then what led you to actually write the book?
Well, I am a pastor. My passion is to teach the Bible, and that's what I do. I'm an administrative pastor here in the United States. But I also enjoy the listening to different pastors, different teachers. And Chuck Missler is one of those that I've listened to before. And listening to Chuck Missler, who likes a lot of science, and he gets kind of far out there, and he really stretches your mind a lot with the Bible and various things. He was teaching about dimensions and the dimensionality of angels. And that's kind of what started this. Are angels three-dimensional characters that just kind of fade in and fade out of our reality? Or are they higher dimensional beings that come into our reality and out of our reality? That's how this whole thing started years ago.
Yeah. So dimensions is obviously something we hear people talking about a lot, and interdimensional beings. But I actually doubt that most people actually even know what we're talking about. And I mean, do we even know what we're talking about when we talk about dimensions and interdimensional beings? But how would you define like dimensions and an interdimensional being?
So dimensions at its very basis is a spatial dimension. We're always talking about spatial dimensions. So we live in a three-dimensional world. Now, once we add time to that, it's four dimensions, but I don't count that as a spatial dimension. So we live in a three-dimension, we're only accustomed to living in a three-dimensional world. Now, if there was a fourth dimension of space that is connected to us, then that would be that next higher dimension. So some will say that the spiritual heaven's got to be someplace. Where is heaven? Well, it's in a higher dimension. We just kind of picture that as this kind of foggy place, a spiritual place, a place where you go when you die. It's up above our three-dimensional. It's kind of connected to our three-dimensional world, but it's and maybe it's part of our three-dimensional world. We're not sure what to do with that. So I intentionally started this book out. It was part of my doctoral program at Louisiana Baptist University to look at just strictly the geometrical dimensions that we live in, and is there a higher geometrical dimension out there that's just undetectable to us, that it's there but we don't see it because it's beyond our three-dimensional realm? That's kind of what started out this study. And then I added in a few things because I touch on string theory, I touch on the theory of relativity, because there's things out there that point to weirdness, to something out there, something beyond our sight, sound, touch. So what is that? What points to that? That's what I was looking for.
So, in your book, you talk about the Apostle Paul, and he says that we're in both like a physical existence as well as a higher dimensional existence at the same time. Could you explain that a little bit?
So if you believe the Bible, which I do, and I believe the Bible is has given to us from God, then it, or if you believe in an afterlife period, that maybe you don't even believe the Bible, but you believe in the afterlife, but then you automatically believe in some other dimension, because it's a spirit, what we would call a spiritual dimension. So that spiritual dimension, or going to heaven, where God is, where angels are, where we will go when we die. Paul speaking about that. He's speaking about a place that has dimensionality. So it has dimensionality. And the particular verses that I think that you're speaking to is in Ephesians. And in there, Paul is talking about that right now we are seated in the heavenlies with Christ. So it's this kind of, how are we physically here on earth? But at the same time, we're in the spiritual realm. Well, one is that we have a spiritual, we are spiritual beings. So we are physical, and then, but we're also spiritual. And then angels are spiritual, and they're also physical. And there is a kind of a mystique, a mystery to that in one hand. But on the other hand, as you're a Christian, you just believe it 100%. You believe in heaven, you believe in angels, you believe in the spiritual realm, but we don't know much about it. We're believing in something 100% that we just don't know a lot about. And I think that's where the intrigue comes in. That's where the mystery comes in. That's where people want to hear more about that. And Paul is talking about that all many times through the Bible. He talks about spiritual warfare, that we do actually have in the spiritual realm against spiritual beings. He just takes it for granted. He talks about the truth of it. One is that we're seated with Christ right now. So I am in two places. I'm in heaven with Christ as a positionally as a believer, but I do warfare in the spiritual realm. And then when I die, I will not only be spiritually in heaven, I will be physically there also, physically and spiritually in this spiritual realm.
Yeah, it poses a lot more questions when you think about it. Like I've been trying to wrap my head around it, and it's just like I think I'll leave some of my questions so later on regarding that, because I think I could just we could go down that rabbit hole and get lost in there. But one of the words that you mentioned there was time, and one of your chapters in your book is called Time Machines and Twilight Zones.
Yes.
So how would you define time, and do you think time travel is actually possible?
Well, so a time is the definition of time would be this: a series of events. So is there? A lot of people will say, first of all, is there time in heaven? Most people just assume there's no time in heaven. Well, there has to be time in heaven because it's a series. There's a series of events going to happen. So time is a series of events. It may be slow. It may be fast. But there is time in heaven. Now, what we mean to say, I think, many times is time is irrelevant in heaven. Doesn't matter. Because of entropy. We have entropy here on Earth, which means things are winding down. I'm getting older. I'm going from point A to point B in life. I'm looking forward to things. I have regrets in the past. Where in the he time in heaven, we don't have any re regrets of the past. We're not looking forward to anything in the future. Even though there is a past and there is a future, we are quite satisfied in the present. So you're soaking in the present. So the definition of time is a series of events. Now, my chapter on time was the hardest chapter in the book that I wrote. It's very time is very, very difficult thing to deal with. Now, is time travel possible? Well, I kind of, in the book, I talk about some different things about when the theory of relativity came up, and we found out that time, it expands and it contracts, and it is a fourth dimension that, depending on what you do with space, time is affected by that. So that's when all the time travel movies came out, and people, and is this possible? Well, I think that time travel is possible if we go in, if we step into the next dimension or go to heaven, because it's very possible that it's a different time in heaven than it is right now. See, one other assumption that we make is you have our time on Earth, and we have time in heaven, and we just assume it's going on at the same rate. That our relatives are up there, kind of waiting, and they're looking at their clock, wondering when our relatives are going to come up, or what time that this it's the same time, but it may not be the same time in heaven as it is on Earth, because heaven is not connected to our. It's not part of the three-dimensional realm. That's the other thing. We think it's just part of the three-dimensional realm, but how do we understand that? It's hard to understand that. So I kind of in the book, and I also, when I'm talking with people, I like to use the computer analogy, where let's say we have a computer game, and there's a world in this computer that I created, and in that there's a time for that game, and that is maybe 1 year for every 1 minute. So it's 1 year for them, for every 1 minute for me. Now I have a time, they have a time. It's two different times. If I was to step into their world, I'm in that time. If I step out of that world into my world, then they're in my time. So it's very possible that heaven is it, when we leave this three-dimensional Earth and we go into heaven, it may be where it's all over. It's done. We're at the end of that time. That because it's same thing. You're in the UK and I'm in the United States. We're in two different time zones. If I go to where you're at, then I'm in your time. Now, at times moving at the same speed there, so that breaks down a little bit. But I like to use the computer analogy where, and I don't. And the things I don't like about the computer analogy is people think we're saying that we live in a computer, we live in a game. This is not a game. This is a reality. This is a digital reality that we live in. But if I step out of this and I step in where God's at, is it the same time or is it a different time? I think it's most likely a different time compared to where we're at here on Earth. That's one of the things that I learned from that. So time travel would be possible. If I die, I'm maybe moving forward in time to where whatever time it is in God. And I kind of got this suspicion that maybe when we die and we get up there, we're at the end, we're at the celebration, and it's all over. It's all past. But so people will say, well, look at the Bible and you look at Revelation, you look at different things. There's things that's got to happen still, and it's talking about heaven and earth. Yeah, but it's all from our perspective for the most part. It's telling us what's got to happen here in our world, for us that we have to experience.
Yeah, I've thought along the same lines as yourself, and it's like, well, the Chronicles of Narnia, they age, they're adults, and then they come back. I know it's fantasy, but it serves a purpose. It illustrates what we're talking about, and they come back and the children again, and no
Right.
time has passed at all on Earth to where when they was in Narnia. And it also reminds me of an interview I did with a gentleman who he actually had to flee the United States and took up residency in Australia for 30 years because he worked on black projects regarding propulsion, advanced propulsion systems and advanced technology. And he talked about time dilation and how some of these advanced craft that they've got, that when we observe them from the outside, they're taking like a quick right angle, which seems almost impossible, but within the craft, because of time dilation, it's moving very slowly for them. So that's why when we observe these particular craft, to us it looks like impossible speeds that they're moving at, but inside, apparently, because of these time dilation technology, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but you know, time within there is different than without. And
Right.
we talk about sort of time travel, and in a way, I've thought about this, that we can sort of time travel in a way by when we, well, we're not physically time traveling, but our memories, we can picture events from the past. We can actually see them. And I've said to people, like, we're not just physical beings, because you can see without eyes, you can speak without a mouth, and you can hear without ears. And when you think about, obviously, the past, that's almost like you're taking yourself back. And that's obviously the spirit man that I'm speaking about there. But during your answer there, you mentioned the string theory, and one of your chapters is Blown Minds and String Theory, and it's definitely a mind-blowing topic. But
Yes.
for those that possibly don't know what string theory is, could you tell us what it is?
Sure. So the basis of string theory is basically that all matter is made up of these of tiny or so all matter is made up of atoms, which we know. But atoms are really not solid, right? They're not. We have these diagrams of atoms where you have a nucleus, and there's a deal a little ball that's like a little marble that goes around that. And it's the you know it's the electrons. Well, it's not really a marble. It's all electronic. It's all you know. It's not solid pieces that are going around. And so the theory is these atoms and the pieces of the atoms, when you break them down to the smallest bit, they're just waves of energy. They're strings of energy. So everything in the whole universe is made up of small strings of energy, depending on how they move, or depending on the makeup of them, depending on what material is made out of it. Now, string theory is just a theory, and it needs extra dimensions for it to work. And that's why I include it in the book, because if it were to be true, it's pointing at that we live in up to 10 or 13 dimensions of space, and one or two dimensions of time. So I don't know if it's true or not, but it's one thing that mathematically it works out. So if it mathematically works out, then maybe there's something there. It also, from that study, got me to look at, if everything is made up of little strands of energy, then really everything that we see, and we know this, is not solid. It's energy. Are we really living in a three-dimensional computerized reality? Now, some people will say this a simulated reality. I don't like to use the word simulated because this is real. The desk I'm sitting at's real. This computer's real. The building I'm in is real, but when you get down to it, it's just energy. It's really empty. It's 95% space, or it's just energy that comes together to make these things. So that's another thing that points us to what? It points us to God, created a, you know, I want to break it down to this, a giant hard drive that is this three-dimensional reality that we live in, and it's all made up of energy. What is that? Electricity. So the same thing as having a sim game. Well, in my computer, that's all electricity that makes that reality together. So we're inside the game. I use that loosely. We're inside this three-dimensional reality, trying to figure out where we came from, how it all began, what this is all made of, and it all points to things bigger than us, and to that being electrified. The speed of light is constant. How is that? Well, if you're in a hard drive that's only 1 mile wide by 1 mile long, the speed of light doesn't take very long to go a mile. So the speed of light is constant in that universe. That's why I don't think we can get to the smallest thing because there's nothing there. And then I don't think we can get to the farthest side of the universe because it will populate. This computer that God has created that we live in, it continues to populate as we get to the uttermost parts of this universe because it's part of the program. It'll populate and it'll be bigger. It'll populate, it'll be bigger, and it'll populate and be bigger.
It's mind blowing because you actually have a chapter, don't you? And it's called the Digital 3D Program
Yes,
called
that's
Life
correct.
and the
Yes.
Intelligent Observer Paradox. Could you elaborate on that, this Intelligent Observer Paradox, and what you actually mean by this
Yeah, so
program that
the
you call, and you
intelligent.
call it Life?
Yes, and I think I have a cheat sheet on that, but the intelligent observer paradox that we talk about is when they started studying the string theory, and I'm not a scientist at all, but when they started studying the small particles and stuff, they were coming to this weirdness of that is everything really there? Is that is you and what they discovered is that it's possibly we what we see makes up our reality, that it is a it, it's a it is a participating a universe, that we participate in our universe, that what my consciousness makes up is the moon. I think Einstein said, is the moon really there? Well, it is if I look up and see it, but as when they looked at the wave particle duality, they act different when they were watched than when they were not watched. So the intelligent observer paradox is, if I'm looking at something, then those waves act, they act as waves or as particles. I can't remember the difference in the two. But if I'm not looking at it, they act as the opposite. So that once again kind of lead me, for the purpose of the book, was this: there's weirdness happening out there that points to something beyond our reality. That was the point of my book. And then it also points to, we are possibly living in a three-dimensional digital reality, or a hard drive that God created, because it's not there. The moon is not there, because in the hard drive, it's not there. It's just a bunch of wires and circuits. But for the person in the hard drive, it is there. Because when I look up, I see the moon, and I see the walls, and I see the stuff. Why? Because that's what's happening in my reality, and that's the basis for the wave particle duality, or the intelligent observer paradox that happens. Photons become material when I see them, but when I don't see them, they're not. Strange deal.
Yeah, it brings to mind the holographic principle that, like, this reality is almost like a projection from the creator. What, like, that he's observing, and we're in within this program or hologram.
Yes.
I mean, there's things that we just don't understand, and I'm okay with not understanding things. And I think sometimes we try to answer too many questions when in reality we can just say we don't know. But I mean, it's an absolutely mind-blowing topic. And when I seen your book, I was like, I've got to obviously get you on here because, this show's all about these types of things. We love it on here. And obviously you talked about the speed of light and how it's constant, but we know from sort of quantum entanglement that actually there's something faster than the speed of light, basically, because obviously we
Yes.
know that if you interact with the particle that's entangled, it's like instantaneous, isn't it?
Yes. That's the one thing. It's called quantum entanglement, or non-locality. And in that, scientists have discovered that the particles in the universe communicate with each other faster than the speed of light, which blew scientists away. might not blow me away as a pastor, don't know that much about it, but it blew them away. So if it's blowing them away, then I know, okay, there's something there. So, and that once again, I think it points back to us being in this created digital reality that that's interconnected. It's not an accident. We're not here by accident. It's created. There's a creator behind that, and it's more than likely a digital reality.
So in the same chapter on the string theory, you mm-hmm. talk about like parallel universes, and some people have said that, you know, quantum physics, some experiments sort of hint to this, like such as the Schrodinger's cat being dead or alive, well, dead and alive at the same time, yes. obviously, until you look in the box.
Right.
Could you explain could you give us your definition of a parallel universe, and do you believe that there is parallel universes and other worlds?
So, no, I don't believe there is a parallel universe or other worlds. But I do believe that is one of the answers to the problems that the scientists have when they're looking at the evidence in our universe to discover what's going, you know, why is this weirdness happening, there's a cause and effect happening, and is there a universe for every single cause and effect? And that's what the multiverse talks about. So that there's billions of universes that have every possibility happening in them. And I don't think I just think that's what it's pointing to, is the fact that once again, we're in a digitally created universe that God created, and he created it this way. And it'd be like this, like a Sim character trying to figure out, you know, why does this thing happening in here? This is a real place. Well, no, it's not. You're inside a computer, and everything, that these little hints that you get are pointing you outside the computer to the real, real reality. And I think, you know, what led to that was the wave particle duality, that photons or light acts as a wave. It also acts as a particle. You know, so is it a wave or is it solid? Are we living in a place where it's just waves, or are things solid? And it was both. So that's what led to the theory of, okay, there's a parallel universe that has the opposite, because if both are true, then the particle is a wave. Well, it has to be a wave in this universe, and it has to be, you know, a solid in this universe. That's the dual. That's where they get the dual at. And then the multiverse is, okay, every single possibility it can happen. Well, then there's billions and billions of universes, and everything's happening in the various different ways. So yeah, I don't think that's true. But I do think it's important to see that scientists, and here's my point in the book, I think I made, is if scientists believe in a multiverse, hey, it's not, then if you can believe God created, you know, our universe, then that's not that crazy, right? I mean, we're just, you know, in line with everybody else.
Yeah. I think, like, scientists, you know, obviously some of them believe this multiverse theory, thinking that, well, if we believe that, it does away with God. Well, no, it doesn't. It just means that he's created more than one universe, if it's true. Right. And obviously they talk about this multiverse generator, and then you ask them, well, where does the multiverse generator come from?
Right.
And they've no answer for that either.
And God would be a possibility in that multiverse, in one of the possibilities. Yeah. And if he's one of the possibilities in there, then he's probably the right one. He would definitely be a possibility.
Yeah. Well, it's like Anselm, he said that if it's even possible that God exists, then he exists. Because if he exists in a possible world, then he must exist in all possible worlds. Therefore, he exists in the actual world. Therefore, a creator exists.
Yes.
Yeah. And we know that to be true anyway, as Christians. That's what we believe. It's not sort of when, you know, obviously people go, oh, well, yeah, you just believe it. It's on faith. Yeah, well, faith's not just like based on nothing. It's based on evidence. It's based on facts.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The evidence shows that we've been created, and I do an extensive. I cover that extensively in my book.
Yeah, you talk about dark matter as well. and dark energy. Now, all I know about dark matter is that it slows down the expansion of the universe, and dark energy actually like speeds it up.
Yes.
Could you sort of build on that with regards to the
So,
chapter?
yes, and one of the reasons I even put those in there was it's just another. So, as I started reading String Theory for Dummies and Theory of Relativity for Dummies, and I highlighted different things that point to things that are happening that point to something beyond us. And dark matter was one of those. Dark matter is a mysterious, unseen thing that has enough mass to hold the galaxies together. So it has mass. It's holding the galaxies together. Dark energy is pushing the galaxies apart from each other. And to the point with dark matter is that light is being bent around this dark matter. So there's matter up there that we can, that we detect, that we know is there, but because light is bending around the dark matter. But we don't see it. So I just throw it out there. Hey, maybe that's where heaven is. Maybe that's pointing to something up there, or that we can't see, but maybe that's that extra dimension. Not saying it is or not, but it's another one of those things that scientists can't explain about our universe that points to something bigger than ourselves. Yes.
Yeah, it. I mean, when we like you said about heaven, we always think, yeah, you go up to heaven, and you know that's like our traditional understanding. But
Right.
what springs to mind is like perception, and when Elisha and his servant were surrounded, and Elisha prayed, open his eyes, not reveal the angels, like you know, Lord, reveal them, as in show them us, but open his eyes. And I think it's down to our perception, because we don't have the perception, do we, to really perceive with our eyes anyway, this
Right.
other dimension.
Right. And the theory may be that when Adam and Eve sinned, we lost that. We chose the physical realm because the fruit looked good. It was good. It was good to eat. It looked good. It would make me wise. So a man chose physical realm over spiritual realm and lost spiritual eyesight. That's probably what happened. In doing that, though, we know it's there. We see the results of it. We see the evidence of it, but we can't see it. And that's like angels. Now, when he saw the angels, they appeared, and other people see angels in the Bible. So angels do appear. We see him in the Old Testament eating. Abraham brought him in. He cooked him food. We would have thought they were men, except for the fact that later on we see that they're not. They're angels, and one of them is the angel of the Lord. So we do see angels cross into our dimension, and. Though we're seeing him in the three dimension, so we're not seeing that spiritual dimension. So I try to, and this is going back to the dimensional talk we started off with, kind of in a way to say, okay, we see three dimensions, I understand three dimensions, but what about four dimensions? Well, we can't understand that. It's not in our brains. We don't understand that. So I don't know what it's like to go from three dimensions to four dimensions. So I try to use an exercise for the people to say, let's go from two dimensions to three dimensions. And there's a book called Flatland on that. I think it's called Flatland, and this is not new to me or anything. So I take a piece of paper and I'll draw a stick figure on this piece of paper, and I'll say this is flat man's world. It's two dimensions. He lives in a two-dimensional world. It goes up and side to side. It's in this piece of paper. Now he has no idea I exist until I take my finger and hit the piece of paper. Now he something has crossed in his two dimension, but it's just a little circle. He can't see the rest of my body. He doesn't see my arms. He doesn't see my head. He doesn't see my feet. He only sees the tip of my finger that's touching or intersecting with his realm. I take it back out. He has no idea. I could be 1 millimeter from that piece of paper. He has no idea I'm there until I cross into his two-dimensional world. Maybe I take three fingers and I put three fingers into his plane, and now he sees three separate circles crossing into his dimension. He has no idea that those three things are even related. He doesn't know that they're part of my hand. He doesn't know that they're part of my arm and part of my body. He thinks there's three separate circles that are there. So I use that saying, okay, a fourth dimension angel that steps into my three-dimensional world will cross into, and I see him as a three-dimensional person. because he's in my dimensions. Now he's not invisible floating around me all the time. No, he's right next to my three-dimensional world. And when God gives him permission, he steps into my three-dimensional world and I see him for who he is. And then he steps back out and he's gone. So most of the time we're seeing three-dimensional. We think angels are kind of like ghosts. They appear, they disappear. Heaven's way, 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 way. It's 13 billion light years away from us. It's way up on top of the galaxy or universe. But I don't think it is. I think it's 1 millimeter from where we're at. And when God gives angels permission, they step into our three-dimensional world, and we see them as a three-dimensional character. So they can be right next to where we're at, and then they step in and step out. So if we die and we go to heaven, do we got to go travel 13 billion light years to heaven? No. I think we go 1 millimeter or less into that next dimension that's right next to us all the time. So all these things I point to in my book with string theory and dark matter and you know, quantum entanglement, you know, and intelligent observer paradox and wave duality, I think those are little things that we have in our three-dimensional world that point to something right next to us or beyond our three-dimensional senses.
One of the things I think about regarding angels, obviously that's what we call them. It's not describing what they are. It's more like a job title, really.
Yes.
Because they're actually a race, aren't they? They could be termed an elder race because they were created before us and they're a separate race from us. They're not human beings. But obviously we call them angels, which means messenger. But obviously we have spiritual battles, but obviously we know in the heavenly realms there's actual spiritual war. And I often think, to what end do angels fight? Because they're immortal beings, and is it like a kinetic war? I mean, what's your thoughts on like the actual warfare that goes on between them?
Right, because I think you nailed that on the head, Paul. Because I mentioned this in the sermon I was preaching not too long ago, when I was like, what if, when angels fight, when the angels were against each other, because I was going through the book of Revelation, you know, do they get taken to a hospital? They can't get killed. Do they get injured? Do they get their arm cut off? Do they get their leg cut? You know, what's going on? We usually picture them with swords and they're fighting each other. And I don't think that is it at all. Now, if we're looking at us living in this three-dimensional digital reality, okay, I'm going to just make a hypothesis, and don't call me crazy for it, but this is a possibility that you have good angels that are trying to protect the program. You have bad angels that are trying to hack into the program, and the bad angels are doing war against the good angels, trying to hack in and give information to us, to try to deceive us, to try to lead us away, to try to take over that entity, to, you know, do various things. So it's a possibility that warfare is more of a online hacker versus, you know, protector warfare against each other. That's a possibility. I don't think they're using swords. You know what I mean? So it's not that, you know, like you said, they're immortal. You're not going to kill them, right?
Yeah, it's just always baffled me as to, you know, if they are warring, what happens to them? You know, like you said, do they get put in prison? Did they lose an arm, a leg? Because it doesn't make any difference, really, because they're not going to die.
Right. Now, they do get locked away, right? We see they get locked away. They've done things they shouldn't do. So there is a way to take their permissions of their access to various realms, including our realm, away from them. I do think that there's something, you know, to that. When you look at, I have a whole section towards the end of my book on spiritual warfare, and in spiritual warfare, it's not this battle, you know, between a bad angel and us. It's always deceiving thoughts, ignorance, the word, it's always about the mind. The angel. So when we're doing warfare, it's not like we're praying against something. It's we're trying to strengthen our mind, because the warfare is in the trying Satan trying to deceive us, to us to believe a lie, to us. And if we believe a lie, then we've opened a gate for him to access in our lives, for us to go off track and to be used by Satan and the demons. So it's a mental thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, obviously it talks about the fiery darts of the enemy, doesn't it? And you can be praying, and then all of a sudden a thought comes in and you're like, you know, a right. blasphemous thought even. So right. like, that is the main war, like war is of the mind.
Yes. It's definitely the mind. And when you look at all those, the battle of the mind, when he, and I, you know, even some verses, it says, whose minds the God of this age has blinded. Paul says, I say therefore and testify to the Lord that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their minds, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. You know, so you're seeing over even the famous one, you know, famous verses of, you know, of where it says in 2 Corinthians 10, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty for the pulling down of strongholds. And we're usually thinking these angels that are above our cities are the strongholds. But here's what he says, pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity. So it's all argument, knowledge, thought. And that's the warfare. And what it is that when Satan deceives us, when we believe a lie, then and that's why drugs, and alcohol can be a way of numbing our senses to what? To help us to believe a lie so that we are led astray. The drugs are not demonic in itself, where it just takes over and we get demon possessed. No, drugs dulls our senses to the point where, oh yeah, I believe that, or people do a lot of stupid things when they're under the influence of whatever, and that's a gateway for Satan to destroy our lives.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to have that helmet of salvation on. Well, it's important to have every piece of armor on.
Yes, yes.
And one of the things I'd say about the armor is we don't have anything for our back.
Yeah.
We've got to go forward always.
Go forward. That's good. That's a good point.
So you've got a chapter called Living in a Designer Universe. And obviously, like we've said, we both believe that the universe is designed because we believe in a creator. Right. Now, obviously, not everyone believes that and they don't believe the Bible, but what evidence within like scientific discovery would you suggest best points to the universe actually being designed?
So in my book, I do lay a few things out that I think that are very important, that we're living in a universe that's created by God. So in preparing this book, I read a lot of books by scientists, because I'm not a scientist, and so I do a lot of quotes in this, because I want to know people, hey, this is not Jeff saying this, this is this scientist. And many of them I would consider unsaved scientists, but because I want them, they're naming a fact about something. Well, one would be order in the universe. And a lot of scientists, though I wouldn't say they're believers in Jesus Christ, I think a lot of them are believers in a higher power that created this thing. And a lot of it is because order in the universe. There's order there. If it happened from an explosion, how many explosions do we know that create order? That usually creates disorder. So you have order in the universe, and you have laws in the universe. So that is probably the number one thing that I think scientists will say, I don't know what it is. It could be aliens. It could be something else, but we are probably created by something of some kind, where I would say it's the God of the Bible. And I list some different law. You know, it says, you know, the laws are universal. Laws are absolute. You know, the laws are eternal and timeless. They don't change. And laws are infinite. They're powerful. So you have these laws and that's what science is discovering laws. So how these laws get there, and how come they're not changing? You know, they would have had to change at some point in time to get to where they're at. They're not changing. The second thing I would say is the anthropic principle, that we are created, that everything was created to be at the right place at the right time for what we need, particularly the Earth. It's at the right distance from the sun. We have the right, you know, atmosphere. We have the right amount of water. We have the right temperature. I mean, and it can't be off on any of these very much. So the anthropic principle. And the third thing I write about is entropy. Entropy is why one of the biggest things, that things are winding down. Things are cooling off. Things are coming to an equilibrium, that that things are slowing down. So we know that there had to be a beginning for things to kind of be, you know, to be more chaotic. It wasn't chaotic to less chaotic. You know, entropy is everywhere and it can't be overcome. You know, our garage doesn't get cleaner, it gets dirtier. You know, our basement doesn't get cleaner, it gets dirty. We have to put energy and effort into to making it more organized. Well, entropy is happening and things are slowing down and things are becoming less organized. The example I use in my book is that a scientist said, NASA scientist, you know, says that if you have a jigsaw puzzle and you drop it on the floor, it's not going to accidentally be put together. It's going to be scattered out. Effort has to be in it to put it together. So we live in this universe that somebody put effort in to make it to what it is. And I think the next one is purpose, that we have purpose. You know, if we think we're just no different than the other animals and that we're going to live for a little bit and then boom, we die and it's black and we're all part of this. Most people don't believe that. Most people, you know, around the world, depending on your religion or non-religion, thinks there's something more after life. So why do we think that and monkeys don't and dogs don't and birds don't? Well, maybe there's a reason we think that there's something beyond life. So purpose. And those are the main reasons that I say that we live in a designer world, that a grand designer programmed, and I call him God and God of the Bible. I kind of lay that out to say, okay, we've been created. So if this creator, if there's a creator out there, who is he? Then I go to the next chapter. I think, I bet he communicated with us. I bet he talked to us. And that's why he gave us the Bible.
Yeah, he definitely did communicate with us, thankfully, and didn't leave us in darkness, which is one of my prayers that I thank the Lord for his word, that he never left us in darkness. You know, sometimes, like living over here in the UK, it's such a dark place. And I think spiritually, we're a bit further down the line than you guys in the States. Church attendance is next to nothing. I mean, your born again Christian would be the minority of the minorities, but God did shine his light into this land, thankfully, and the gospel was preached mightily over the years, and there's still a remnant there, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And I've obviously just mentioned light, and we know that God is light. He's not just light, but the Bible talks about God being light, and you have a chapter called Here, There, and Everywhere, the multidimensionality of God. And I know there's a relation between light and omnipresence. So going on the basis that God is light, could you sort of elaborate on how that's relevant to God being omnipresent?
Yeah, so I use kind of the analogy, and that I'm not the first one to do, between, you know, the properties of light and God, that light, photons, they're everywhere. They're everywhere and everything. They hold stuff together, and God is everywhere. And you know, that light is one of those essentials that we have in the universe. God is an essential. And then the speed of light, that supposedly, theoretically, if you travel the speed of light, then time stands still, and that would be God, right? That time would be standing still. And then you have, you know, electromagnetism that holds the atoms together. And, you know, that was the real paradox for scientists, was that we have gravity and all these things that happen, but then they got down to the subatomic level and those things didn't affect the atom. They're held together with this electromagnetism and, you know, that's just points to God holding everything together. So in that chapter, my intent was, okay, let's talk about the multidimensionality of various things. The word of God was one of them, but God, you know, himself is another one. He's multidimensional. And that's why we really, you know, you talk about the Trinity. How do you understand the Trinity? Well, you really can't understand it. It's kind of like looking at a mathematical equation. I see the equation. I see it adds up. How do I understand it? I don't know, but I know it's true that it's the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And that kind of goes back to my, you know, analogy of putting your three fingers into the plane of the piece of paper. We're not sure how they connect, but they do. I'm not sure how they connect and they're one and they're separate, but the Bible, you know, says they are. They're multi, you know, dimensional. And then as a spirit, you know, God's everywhere. As the Holy Spirit, all the omnis, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, all of those show his multidimensionality. So really the fact that of what we study about God, of his character and his qualities, all point to him being bigger and him being outside of our time and space and his multidimensionality. That's what makes him God.
Yeah. One of the things that obviously we often say is that God is a spirit. But more correctly, God is spirit.
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, to think that he's outside of time and space, I often think of this, that he can see, like, the end from the beginning.
Right.
So when we read the scriptures and there's a prophecy, he's seen that anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and see, and with God being, he's outside of our space and time, right?
Mm.
And he has to be, because he's got to be outside of that which he created. So technically, I didn't really go into it, because technically he would be outside of heaven, right? If he created heaven, he's outside of everything he created. So possibly heaven is a fourth dimension. So that means God's in a fifth dimension of space and time, whatever that would mean. That might blow our minds to go too far there. But he's outside of what he created. So it'd be just like us looking at a computer deal, and we see the whole thing play out. Well, we know what's going to happen. Now, he knows even the possibilities of what's going to happen. If this happened, what would happen there? And the possibilities that didn't happen, he knows there, because he's outside of that which he created. And still inside it at the same time, because he's here with us and he visits us, you know.
Yeah, because it's like, obviously, someone who's built my computer, they're not inside running around there pressing things inside, you know. Right. they were outside of it. And like, yeah, you know, he's got to be outside of everything he's created. And obviously that's, you know, when we're getting into fifth. And I mean, how is it 13 dimensions that's been sort of mooted? That, I mean, I don't know where they get these figures from, but that is it 13 that they've talked about, scientists?
Yes, 10 and 13. And how they get that is the mathematical equations that they do, they have to have that many dimensions for the equations to work. Or so it works with 10, and then some other equations work with 13. So that's where they get those numbers. 10's the most popular ones that's used, you know. 10, now I think it's 9 dimensions of space and 1 dimension of time for the calculations to work out, you know, on paper.
Mm. So they're just theories, aren't they? Like a lot of things just, within the science community. It's
just theories. Know,
mathematics based, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff,
but, you know, God's mathematical.
Yeah. You know, some of the things that obviously we've spoke about, they're going to be things I'm going to be thinking about all week now. Because it's such, you know, I mean, the book itself is, like I said to you, I've read a sample of it. I'm definitely going to read the whole thing, because, you know, I could definitely recommend it to people just based on what we've spoke about and the bits that I've read. I think a couple of chapters that I've read. But just for my audience, could you just remind us where they can get your book, and also tell us about the church you're a pastor of? Because I know I have people in the States, maybe they might be interested in that.
Yes. So you can get the book on Amazon. If you just Google my name, Jeff Rhodes, or the book, you know, Bible Dimensions in the Spiritual Realm, it'll come up. And I have it on paperback, hardback, and audiobook. You can get it on the audiobook there through Audible, and also on Kindle. So you can get it on there. In our church, I'm in Topeka, Kansas, Topeka Baptist Church, and we're a verse by verse teaching church. And we teach the, but we on Sunday mornings we're going through Genesis and preaching. I'm the administrative pastor, so I'm not the senior pastor. I kind of keep things organized. I do the teaching on Wednesday nights, and right now I'm going through the Book of Revelation, teaching through that. So that's my passion, is to teach the Bible and help people mature and grow in the Word and grow in their knowledge of the Word. And you can catch us at topekabaptist.org, topekabaptist.org. We have our sermons on there and in our sermon archive. You can catch Pastor Mark, who preaches every Sunday, and I do the Wednesday nights.
Well, Jeff, it's been fascinating. It's one of the more mind-blowing episodes I've done. I knew it would be. As soon as I seen your book on Amazon, I was like, definitely want to speak to you on here. So I'm sure that my audience are definitely going to be interested in everything you have to say. And probably I myself as well are going to delve deeper into a lot of these topics that we've covered. So thank you for your time tonight. I'll be back next week, guys, with another guest. I'm Paul, and this is Beyond the Paradigm.
Am I crazy? We don't use that word in here.